Coming up on Tech News Today, the NSA outrages Google with a fiber tap. Smartphones now allowed during takeoff and landing, sort of. And Sprint promises 1 gigabit per second internet in the future. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, October 31st, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, and other Apple products are worth at Gazelle.com. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT10. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Isaac Tar.
I'm Jason Howell.
Sarah Lane is in Novato, California, and she will join us as soon as she gets there. There was some really bad bridge traffic in San Francisco, but let's kick off today's show with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feeds. The Washington Post reported another Edward Snowden leak yesterday describing Project Muscular, a joint operation of the U.S.'s NSA and the U.K.'s GCHQ. The project allegedly taps fiber optic cables between data centers for both Google and Yahoo. If true, this would allow the spies to see almost all data used by the two services as they sync their data centers across four different continents. It also has the advantage of being outside the U.S., therefore not subject to laws prohibiting domestic surveillance. Meanwhile, if you're wondering what Snowden's doing for vodka money these days, his lawyer announced he starts work in November for a major Russian website that remains unnamed. Somebody will leak it soon, for sure.
IDC reports that the iPad is the number one tablet in the world, but its market share is now 29.6% in Q3 of this year. In Q3 of 2012, Apple had a whopping 40.2%. Samsung is still number two with 20.4% of the world stage. Rounding out the top three is the transformer-loving Asus with 7.4%.
AT&T's efforts to gain more market share in Europe by acquiring local telecoms could be affected by recent leaks of NSA surveillance data. European officials tell the Wall Street Journal AT&T is implicated, along with Sprint and Verizon, in the government's data collection. The FISA Amendments Act allows the NSA to request all phone metadata records from the companies. Quote, we'd need to have a concrete discussion to make sure that European data wouldn't be leaving Europe, one official told the Journal.
Pandora is now available on Google's Chromecast dongle. An update to Pandora's Android and iOS mobile apps will now include a cast button, which will allow for one-touch streaming to the TV. Pandora users can stream to Chromecast from Android smartphones and tablets, as well as iPhones, but not yet iPads. The company says iPad support is coming soon.
Sarah Lane has reached Northern Novato. The U.S. FAA announced today it will allow use of portable electronic devices during takeoff and landing, as long as they're in airplane mode. Airlines have to submit a plan to comply with the new regulations, so don't expect to be able to do this right away. But the FAA expects most implementations to be in place by the end of the year. There are also a few models of airplanes not proved to be tolerant of devices, and in low visibility conditions, you may still be asked to turn off your device during takeoff and landing. Delta hopes to have its plan in place and ready to go by November 1st.
Facebook reported its quarterly financials, and 49% of its advertising revenue came from mobile usage. That's an increase of 8% from the last quarter. Facebook's total advertising revenue was $1.8 billion. Facebook's desktop advertising revenue fell $26 million from the second to third quarter. Looks like that little social network's going to make it.
Yay, good job, little social network. Steam's active accounts rose 30% over the last year to 65 million, according to Valve. One contributing factor is Valve's most popular game, Dota 2, with more than 500,000 daily peak concurrent players. In comparison, Xbox Live has reported 48 million accounts, while Sony's PlayStation Network claims 110 million.
Sprint has introduced Sprint Spark, an enhanced LTE service it says will deliver unprecedented speeds to its cell phone users. The company demoed the service running at 1 gigabit per second, but the company says customers can expect 50 to 60 megabits per second peak speeds today, with increasing speed over time. The first Spark-supported phones will be the Samsung Galaxy Mega, the Galaxy S4 Mini, the LG G2, which will all be available on Sprint's network on November 8th.
Sarah Lane has reached Olympali State Park. Cisco announced Wednesday it is open sourcing its H.264 video codec implementation and released a plugin that allows third-party developers to use H.264 without paying any licensing costs. Giggoing reports Mozilla will add H.264 to the Firefox browser in the first half of 2014. Why is this important? Well, the Internet Engineering Task Force is meeting in Vancouver next week to decide on a default codec for WebRTC. That's the standard that allows video communication over the Internet without any special software, so goodbye Skype. Google has been pushing its VP8 codec for the standard. Cisco has invested a lot of money in the software and hardware that relies on H.264 and would like it to last at least until the next generation like H.265, VP9, or DALA take over, and that's many years down the road.
Remember that wacky Hyperloop rail system that Elon Musk proposed? Well, according to a new company called Hyperloop Transportation Technologies, a prototype of the Hyperloop will be ready by 2015. The company published a 2-year timeline of the project. Hyperloop Transportation Technologies also announced a number of partnerships with a including one company called Ansys, which created some of the first software simulations of the Hyperloop.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Gazelle. Maybe you've been thinking about getting that new iPad or just a new iPhone. Well, Gazelle wants you to give them your old phone, and not just for free. They're going to pay you for it. And you can lock in the price today. Send it to Gazelle when you get your new one, because you have 30 days from the moment you get a quote from them, and they lock that price in until you have to send it away. Gazelle makes selling your used gadgets fast and simple. You just go to G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com, find the item you want to get rid of, tell Gazelle the condition. They'll even buy broken iPhones and iPads, and then get a risk-free offer for your gadgets and free shipping. As soon as they get your device and confirm it's the right one and all that stuff, they'll turn around a check or PayPal or an extra 5% with an Amazon gift card, and you get the cash or the Amazon gift card. They get an extra 5% with that. Go to gazelle.com now. Get an offer for your iPhone or iPad. Find out what it's worth. Just take a minute. Go there and find out. Do it now, because your iPhone may lose value the longer you wait. Gazelle.com. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. All right, joining us now to discuss the stories of the day, news editor from GigaOM, Tom Krazit. Tom, are you a Red Sox fan?
Actually, no.
Okay.
I'm a Mets fan, which is a lower form of life entirely. But I spent 10 years in Boston and got a little attached to the Sox. And
so you have Red Sox leanings.
Yes, they're my American League
tendencies.
Team. Can I say that? I don't know.
That's all right. We'll let it pass then.
Sorry, Tom.
That's okay. Now, congratulations to the Boston Red Sox winners of the World Series over my favorite St. Louis Cardinals, but it was a hard-fought series. Well done. Let's talk about technology news, though. For those of you who hate the sports ball, maybe you'll love this. The NSA is spying on Google and Yahoo,
as
we mentioned. Yeah, exactly. Woohoo! Cheers. This is pretty disturbing, and it's, you know, one of the pull quotes from this is from the Washington Post story where they showed this to Google engineers who swore loudly when they saw this one little handwritten description of what's going on. Essentially, Google and Yahoo, they have data centers across multiple continents, and they lease or own fiber interconnects between those data centers that they thought were secure. And so they sync all this data. Sometimes archives of email and stuff go to these data centers so that they're closer to the places that people might be requesting them. What seems to have happened is the GCHQ in the UK, along with the NSA, put in place Project Muscular, which is a buffer that taps these fiber interconnects outside the data center and holds 3 to 5 days of traffic, decodes the proprietary data formats in which they're transferred, and then filters for certain information and sends that data to Fort Meade, Maryland. Now, Eric Hesseldahl from All Things D points out that the fiber has to be regenerated every 50 miles. So that's one point where they could have put in a tap, one of these regeneration points along the fiber lines. And he also points out that the USS Jimmy Carter is outfitted for intelligence collection on undersea cables, and that is a ship that could have possibly implemented something like this. The NSA, for their part, says that they apply attorney general approved processes to protect the privacy of U.S. persons, minimizing the likelihood of their information in our targeting, collection, processing, exploitation, retention, and dissemination. No comfort for foreigners there, but it's supposed to comfort you to trust that they won't spy on you. They promise. They also deny that they're operating under Executive Order 12333, which describes limits over the collection of data on U.S. citizens overseas, which would go along with them saying we're only collecting it on non-U.S. citizens. Google's David Drummond, he's their chief lawyer, says, "We are outraged at the lengths to which the government seems to have gone to intercept data from our private fiber networks, and it underscores the need for urgent reform." Yahoo just says, hey, we have strict controls in place and we don't cooperate with the NSA and let them do this. So we're not sure why they're doing it. Tom, these revelations just seem to get worse and worse. We're starting to kind of get used to them. It's not any surprise, is it, at this point that this is going on?
It's not a surprise that it's going on. It's the methods and the techniques that are being used that I think are, you know, more and more surprising every time. The drip of this news has been kind of crazy. Yeah. You know, it's like Snowden gave a document dump to Greenwald and The Guardian and all these other organizations, and then they're just trickling them out little by little as we learn kind of about these things. And, you know, that to me has been kind of crazy that they're – I can't imagine they put all the best stuff first. You know, like I'm pretty sure there's other shoes to drop, like with this information. So, I mean, it's kind of amazing to think about the extent of what can be done.
Well, and they obviously, apparently, if you read the report, they went to Google and talked to the engineers here before they reported the story. So different stories are going to take different amount of confirmations to find out if they're likely and get some other confirmation of what's in the leaks, right?
Well, I really like that anecdote, too, because I think it was really maybe finally the time where Google said, I have had enough of this. You know, it was like a line that had been crossed that they were like not just... You know, it's one thing for Google to comply with laws they don't like. They're laws, they have to comply with them. But it's another thing for the NSA to be, like, tapping into the links between them and their other data centers. And, I mean, that's what they were doing, right? They weren't, like, hacking into their data centers exactly. They were, you know, sort of stealing the mail as it was in transit.
That's what it sounds like, if you read this report.
Yeah.
Is that they were outside the data center somehow and intercepting the fiber link.
And Google's been encrypting this traffic since, I want to say, last summer. Or at least last year. So it sounded like, you know, at some point Google sort of maybe got wise to the fact that this was going on and then, you know, started, you know, encrypting more and more traffic. So, I mean, to me, the smiley face on the picture, though, makes the whole thing. It's like the NSA has evolved from clip art to hand drawn.
Posted art right there.
You know, I don't know if that's evolution.
I wonder if any of this stuff has motivated Google to do their crazy moonshot projects, with like Project Loon. These data floating data centers, they would want to just basically say, look, we're tired of getting spied on. We can figure out our own way around you. Because if this, it seemed strange that they were doing these projects, but as we find out more and more, they're being tapped every which way. If they were making their own network to be, look, we're secure because no matter what's going on, the government's always going to be looking at us. We can have our own network. That's a kind of a harebrained idea. But I wonder if it actually motivated this company to do some of the things that we thought were strange at first, but now it's starting to make more sense why they would basically be building their own internet.
Well, it's an arms race, right? I mean, like any kind of security thing, it's like you try to stay one step ahead of the guy who's trying to break into your thing. And, you know, so yeah, I mean, I wonder if that has motivated a lot of their alternative network.
Maybe Dave in the chat room thinks maybe that's what that barge is. They're going to barge into international waters, he says, so they can't get monitored. Although apparently if you're in international waters, you can still get monitored. In fact, that's the preferred way at Project Muscular. Well, that's
depressing.
Yeah, exactly. That's depressing.
But all too common. I mean, how long have we been talking about this? You know, and there's more to come. So it's like
since May, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
We're becoming desensitized to this. Unfortunately,
just keeps rolling out. And it is building more and more support in the U.S. Congress to do something to change how this operates.
And they're a very effective bunch of people. So
yeah,
I can
sure
really see that.
They're efficient. Doesn't take much, does it? All right, let's talk about something more fun. How about gigabit per second wireless connectivity someday?
Yeah, one day that'll probably be monitored as well. Who knows, right? Yeah. So Sprint introduced Sprint Spark. It's its LTE service that Sprint's saying unprecedented speeds. Now, here's how this works. Sprint actually has three different frequencies for its faster speed network. They have an 800 megahertz frequency, a 1.9 gigahertz, a 2.9 gigahertz cellular band. And what their phones are going to be able to do is they're going to be able to switch seamlessly between these three networks. Sprint has claimed in the lab, they've been able, and they demoed this, 1 gigabit per second wireless. They're claiming 50 to 60 megabits peak speeds for actual consumers when this rolls out. Dan Hesse made a comment about Sprint's unlimited plan. He's saying the unlimited plans aren't going anywhere. Even when Spark comes out, they're still going to be unlimited. Rollout begins today with limited availability in New York, L.A., Chicago, Miami, and Tampa. Sprint's claiming 100 cities by 2016. Tom Krazit, do you think these crazy fast wireless speeds, promises of unlimited data, can this do anything for Sprint to topple AT&T or Verizon?
Well, yeah. I mean, it all depends on how, you know, well they actually roll out. I mean, you know, wireless lab demos are kind of ridiculous, mm-hmm. right? They're like science fair projects. They don't. You know, when you suddenly introduce things like buildings and bridges and trees into the middle of, you know, a wireless environment, your speeds kind of tend to vary. But, you know, I mean, it's the continual march of this stuff, though, right? Like, it's getting to the point where wireless speeds can rival, you know, wireline speeds. And, you know, there's going to be a horse race between those companies as well to see who can, you know, provide the fastest. And, you know, it's not just the fastest, though. It's the most reliable service. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, if it's fast but you can't always get it when you want it, it doesn't really matter. So it's they got to worry about both sides of that coin.
And Sprint's playing catch-up right now. They're playing catch-up in a couple of ways, actually. The LTE rollout is catch-up, so they got to make it sound better than just, well, now we have LTE, too, and we're last to the table. But they're also playing catch-up with T-Mobile. And remember, AT&T and Verizon are leading the pack here. T-Mobile's trying to catch up by saying, we're more flexible, we don't overcharge you, we're the bargain platform, we're the consumer-friendly platform, and Sprint is not doing that, so they got to have something. And speed is a good way to grab some headlines. I just don't know how many people trust that they're really going to get those speeds and whether that really changes people to go to Sprint. Although paired with the unlimited, it makes a little more compelling case, I suppose.
Yeah. Coverage area is definitely the major thing that Verizon's got going. They claim that I think they've converted all of their 3G networks to 4G networks. AT&T claims the fastest speed at this point. Verizon's been doing tests, and people have seen this just anecdotally, 80 megabits per second with their next version of LTE. I think Sprint's idea of trying to marry the three bands together that they can switch off, so they would have an increased coverage area, even though they don't really have the widespread coverage of a Verizon or AT&T. That might give them an edge slightly, no pun intended with edge there. Hopefully it'll be more like 4G.
Remember edge. God.
I don't like edge, and I remember because it's still on T-Mobile when I have bad days.
Sprint's always had a lot of really cool network assets that they've never actually managed to put together. So, you know, maybe this is a time that they can finally do it.
All right. It seems that Sarah has entered the parking garage, and we should see her.
She is right here. And
even one just,
better. Here, your mic is live now, Sarah.
I got to look at this.
She's got to look at the...
coming into this a little late.
You get used to it more than you think, actually.
If you're listening to the audio version, there might be something slightly different about the way I look today, because it is Halloween.
Oh, have we not talked about this yet? Mm-mm. Oh,
I thought
dear.
Your color had drained from your face, Ayaz.
Well, when we were talking about the NSA stuff, it really...
scared you white.
Yeah, it just drains my blood, and it's really disheartening.
You remember the makeup gun from The Simpsons?
That's kind of like... if that worked this morning, that would have been much faster. I want to tell you that. This took a lot of time. Hi, Sarah. It's good to see you.
This has been such a weird morning.
I'm sorry about the traffic, Sarah Lane.
What's that, Tom?
I said I'm sorry about the traffic, but you have good news to talk about, if you're ready, with the FAA saying, hey, you don't have to put your Kindle away during takeoff.
Correct, Tom. This is really good news. So the story is that the FAA has basically... We've heard for a while now that they were going to relax some of its restrictions on the idea that you can't have an electronics device, you know, powered on during takeoff and landing. Now, they say don't get too crazy about it just yet because the changes will have to differ depending on each airline, depending on a particular kind of plane that you're in, and how things are run at each different carrier. However, most will be able to allow passengers to use their gadgets in airplane mode, gate to gate, by the end of the year. So personal electronic devices, which the FAA calls PEDs, they say the reason that it's going to be somewhat of a slow rollout is because the airlines have to make changes and then submit, basically come back to the FAA and say, give us a safety assessment, give us approval, then we can change our personal electronic device policy, and then the passengers can keep their devices on. But, you know, airplane mode is fine and good. That means that you can play games during takeoff and landing. You could be watching movies during takeoff and landing. Stuff that obviously doesn't, you know, you're not going to be able to use your cell service. You're not going to be able to make a phone call. But you would be able to, if the plane included Wi-Fi, there wouldn't be some sort of a limit when you drop down below a certain number of feet on the airplane where the Wi-Fi cuts out. So, conceivably, you could have internet the entire time as well for people like me. That makes flying just an absolute joy. You can also, as far as like ebook readers and, you know, maybe you're holding your iPad or whatever, you can choose not to stow your electronic device. You can choose to hold it in your lap if you so desire, kind of like a purse, I guess, as long as it's not really, really big. I don't know. I'm super excited about this.
I always thought it was kind of funny that you could have a 10-pound copy of Stephen King's It sitting on your lap watching a plane, right. But you couldn't have a little Kindle.
Right.
It was kind of like,
yeah.
Well, crash the plane. It hurt somebody. If it falls ahead of you instead of the...
Well, the idea that the like a big old iPad shouldn't just be sitting out on a seat without you holding it makes sense to me, right? Same way that the 10-pound Stephen King book shouldn't just be sitting out on the seat either. You should have it in your hands. And so that never washed for me as a reason that this ban was in place. And they've been very careful about making sure that there's not going to be interference, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm glad they finally got around to figuring that out, especially since almost everyone, I'm not going to name any names, but I bet most of you in the audience don't turn your actual iPads or Kindles off when you put them away. You just put them out of sight.
Anything with an on or off switch must be fully powered down. I mean, who does that?
Well, my iPad doesn't have an on or off switch.
Are you guys like just admitting that you don't power your stuff off? I know that sometimes people don't, but there are other people who get really upset about that sort of thing.
Yeah, I've seen enough people on the airplane like they just get really nervous and they're staring at that guy still using their iPhone. You're like, Something bad's going to happen. Nothing.
I'm never worried about something bad happening. I am worried that there's going to be some conflict with the flight attendant. It's going to delay our takeoff because they're having an argument. That's why I usually glare at those people.
They don't make you turn your devices off on Air Force One. And if they don't make you turn your devices off on Air Force One, then I think it's probably okay.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I, for one, am excited about these new restrictions being lifted. Candy Crush, gate to gate.
Yeah, by the end of the year in the United States, and hopefully it will be a Candy Crush playing world all over the globe by the end of next year. Yeah,
what would we complain about on planes now, though? I mean, the internet speed.
The food's been done to death.
You won't be able to make calls or connect to your LTE network.
But then that's the next thing, right? People could get away with not turning it off by leaving it in airplane mode. Now that airplane mode is the rule, people leave it on and they'll sneak calls. So it's just the evolution of getting around the rules.
Yeah, good luck with that, getting a connection.
Evolution of jerks.
There is some Wi-Fi international on international flights being played with these days, so that's kind of promising as well. You may actually be able to surf while going to Japan or something. Let's take a quick break and thank our other sponsor for today's show, Squarespace.com, the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, or online store. Now, you've heard me talk about using Squarespace for my book site or for swordandlaser.com, but Jason Howell, you've been using it too.
I have. You know, they actually just rolled out, and I didn't hear a whole lot about this until I started kind of redesigning my site in advance of the album that I've been working on. I'm kind of almost ready to unveil that officially, and they actually have new functionality for musicians, which is really kind of cool. You can upload your music, and it has like a full album streamer, displays the album art. You can play all the different tracks and kind of list any like purchase information. Really, really useful for musicians if you want to just kind of host your music on Squarespace. Of course, they also have kind of the commerce stuff behind that as well if you want to sell your music, but really cool stuff tailored to musicians. They've been tailoring to artists and, you know, a lot of other creative kind of divisions for such a long time. It's nice to see them work in the musician aspect too, and I'm totally using it. I love it.
It's great for all kinds of uses that. Starts at $8 a month, includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. And if Jason wants to start selling his albums on there, he can do that too. It's integrated to work with every Squarespace template. He can sell physical or digital goods, MP3s or CDs, and it'll get one interface for order management, tracking orders, customizable customer email updates, printing shipping labels, and adding coupons. Plus, it's in multiple countries, 10 countries around the world. Why not start a trial? You don't have to give them a credit card number even. Just go to squarespace.com, start building your website. When you decide to sign up for the Squarespace service, make sure to use the offer code TNT10 to get 10% off. And to show your support for Tech News Today. And we thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. They've been a fantastic supporter of the show, keeping us on the air. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. I came across this on Tech Meme today. It's a fizz.org article about an EU-funded project named Pursuit that wants to eliminate the need for servers. Now, it doesn't say they're going to ban servers, but they're going to say you won't need servers if you want to distribute content. And they think it will actually be more efficient, it'll be faster, be more secure, give you better control of your private info, and no more server crashes. It's essentially using an internet-wide peer-to-peer approach. So if you understand how BitTorrent works, you kind of understand how this would work. The idea is that when you download content, you would also publish that content, and anyone who has the rights to access it would be able to get it. And those rights would be a fingerprint that's on that information. They won the Future Internet Assembly Award after successfully demonstrating applications using this. You can go to www.fp7-pursuit.eu/pursuitweb if you want to learn more about it. But essentially, they're saying instead of URLs, universal resource locators, saying the content is over there and now everyone has to go over there to get it, you'd use URIs, universal resource indicators, saying look around, maybe someone nearby you on the network has this, and then you can get a piece of it from them, a piece of it somewhere else. You don't have to wait for servers every time you download content. You can also control access to data. Their example in their video is of somebody who wants to share data from their heart monitor, but they only want their doctor and emergency services personnel to see it. And they could do that because they don't have to put it on a server and also be sharing it with the cloud services provider, which you have to do if you have it on a remote server. Here, they're just saying, we're going to publish the data. It's going to get copied out there, but only these two types of people can access it. Now, this is a little bit pie in the sky, and I haven't gone into all the details that would really vet it to make sure you know how it works. But granted that this is getting a lot of review and a lot of eyes are on it, there's a lot of discussion around it. Tom, what do you think?
I don't know. You know, I wasn't familiar with this project before. The first thing I'm wondering is sort of how, you know, we've been talking a lot about surveillance and we've been talking a lot about, you know, all that stuff that's going on. But data is important for publishers in a lot of different ways, right? Like you sort of need to know how your content's being distributed and who's reading it and you know, how that's going out. So I'm wondering, you know, from a purely selfish editorial business standpoint, like what this would mean. You know, it seems like it would be really easy for a lot of different applications like the one you mentioned, though. The medical one is a really interesting one just because there's so many, you know, pitfalls that potentially lie with sharing of that data. So that's interesting. But yeah, like I don't really know all the details of this one.
Yeah, I mean, you would have to assume it'd be harder to surveil if things are more distributed because you couldn't just go to the server. You couldn't go to the data center and think you're going to get everything.
It would be harder to do the, you know, the man in the middle thing where you're just sort of tapping between links because you wouldn't necessarily know where to be, I think. But I don't know. It's an interesting concept.
Sarah, Ayaz, what do you guys think of this?
Well, just I love the idea of it. It sounds like it makes a lot more sense. I'm trying to think of, if you look at the other side of it, what potential dangers would there be having somebody that's closer to you as far as pinging another computer? I mean, is there really any downside to this as far as security goes?
I'm not really sure.
Ayaz, go ahead.
I'm not really sure if there's a downside to security element of it. When it comes to peer-to-peer, anytime you do like one of those searches, not a search, a little speed test, right? If you go to the local server, it's way faster than when you go to something across the country. So if theoretically it can increase speeds, that'd be interesting. I just wonder about the idea if it's peer-to-peer. I mean, theoretically, the internet's supposed to be a bunch of distributed machines, right? So what's the real difference between this other than the fact that multiple servers are serving you at the same time? I'm still trying to wrap my head around the whole concept.
Well, it's instead of a client-server model, which is what we have now, and the analog being I download from iTunes, right, and Apple has the servers, it's a BitTorrent model. It says now there aren't any servers. There's not one place. You just go out there and call for the information. And if you're saying, well, how does that work? Look into BitTorrent, because that's exactly how BitTorrent works. A tracker goes out and says, who's got pieces of this, and starts assembling the data.
Yeah, but wouldn't that mean that every user of iTunes would have to download the song and then they would have to have their computers on so they could seed it? That would be the way that would work, right?
Yeah, but if it's the entire internet working, then enough of the internet is on at once that shouldn't end up being a problem. At least that's the proposal here.
But you have to get all those people to buy into it. So you've got that chicken or the egg problem to a certain extent,
yeah.
Right? Like, so I don't know. It's really cool, though.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting take, and one that I think, if done right, and there are a lot of questions about encryption and proper implementation, but those can be solved, whether this organization is solving them or not. It's not something I've actually looked into. But let's say, you know, for argument's sake, that they can be solved and they are solved. This would be a much more robust, efficient, and next-generation internet. And everybody's been saying that, you know, TCP/IP is kind of aging. We need to come up with something else. Maybe this is it, or maybe something like this. Or this points the way to it. I thought it was worth batting around a little bit. Let's go on to the Bing story. I don't quite understand what a hero ad is. Explain it to me.
A hero ad. So there's a pilot program going on, Bing Smart Search in Windows 8.1. Right now, there's no word if this thing is headed to Bing on the web. So when you conduct a brand search in Windows 8.1, you'll be greeted with a large photo and custom links created by an advertiser instead of a list of search results. So as an example, like in this image here, you can see if you search for Land Rover in Windows 8.1, you'd get a large image of a Land Rover with custom links like schedule a test drive or request a quote. There are other things like Home Depot out there, a bunch of different advertisers that Bing's testing with, Land Rover, Jaguar, Home Depot, Radio Shack, and a bunch of others. Microsoft's not being paid for this right now. They're just testing it out to see what the reaction is like. During the pilot, the ad will be shown to a subset of people searching for the specific names of the companies or brands on Windows 8.1. So if you're looking for, like, Ford Explorer, you're not going to see this giant Land Rover-style ad. 44% of Windows 8.1 searchers in the U.S. who type the specific search terms will see the new ads. And if you want the traditional search results, that'll be to the right side. And like I mentioned, there's no word of whether this is going to come to the web at all. Tom Krasit, hero ads. They seem like a good idea or like a terrible idea?
Well, it depends on who, you know, you're talking about. I mean, for Microsoft and for brand advertisers, this is a great idea, you know, because you can then charge more, you know, to have that prominent, you know, image right there or to have that result right there. And, you know, Google was testing this, I think, a couple weeks ago as well. So, you know, it's definitely something everyone's considering. You know, from a user, like, would you rather see the individual search results? You know, maybe. But, you know, to me, this is kind of an interesting, you know, evolution of the web. And you know, this is something we're going to be talking about a lot next week at our roadmap conference in San Francisco, is that design is becoming much more important and the experience of how you use things is much more important than just simply getting the 10 blue links that we've always been used to getting when we type something into Google or to Bing. So if you actually get a better result from these hero ads, you get the information that you want displayed a little bit more prominently. Like, I don't know if that's a bad thing. You know, we have to kind of see how well they implement it, you know, how you know, greedy they get with in terms of like how they sell this to advertisers. And, you know, it certainly is a, like if you're a Land Rover dealer, though, or say a Land Rover mechanic, like you've just been pushed off the list, right, for mm-hmm. your local area. So that's maybe something that would worry some people.
I think the thing that bothers me is, and I agree with you, Tom, that if you're searching for something like Land Rover, maybe it's the hero ad gives you the exact information that you're looking for. And so it kind of everybody wins. I think the problem I have with it is that there's a certain way when you use a search engine, there's a certain predictability to the whole experience. So, you know, no matter what you're searching for, it's kind of going to look a certain way. And then you figure out what result applies to you best. With ads, there's a lot more of like, well, let's just see what they decide to make it look like. So even if the information is there, there's a little bit of it's pushing a certain style in an advertisement on me. So even if it's relevant, that kind of bugs me.
It's very similar to that story we had about Google, where everybody's calling them banner ads, but they were essentially you searched on a term and you got a page spanning picture that went along with that search result as part of a paid sponsorship. This is just a different implementation of that. And I think what it is trying to walk that line between you asked for it and the brand wants to have more impact than just you looking for something, so that you're for sure going to go to their controlled message about their brand. And I think that this has a chance of not being upsetting to people because of that. If I type in Land Rover and a Land Rover picture comes up, I'm not going to go, wait a minute, why are they pushing Land Rover on me? It's what I was looking for in the first place.
I was looking for a safari across Africa. Jeez.
Yeah, exactly. I guess the edge case is where maybe I was looking for something and this comes up and it's not what I was looking for. Land Rover being a bad example, but let's say I'm looking for apples and Apple comes up with a big picture of the Apple store. And I'm like, no, I actually wanted the fruit. That's a horrible example that probably wouldn't happen, but stuff like that could happen.
It looks almost like an application more than it does an ad. You see the giant Land Rover, it's almost like the app, so you schedule a test drive and do these other things that you would probably be doing through either their web app or you'd be doing through a Windows 8 app. So instead of going through that work, you have that. Like when I did a search for Virgin America on Google, I get the options with the big ad for Virgin America, which says book a flight, current deals, where we fly. You already have these context-specific actions. So to have them customized by the advertiser might seem a little intrusive, but that's already happening in our search results. So if you really want a Land Rover or whatever We're not being paid by Land Rover either, by the way. We keep saying
no, it's just, it's just an example. Yeah.
There's Walt Disney World and other ads as you saw on that thing. If you want to have that kind of interaction and it's easier to work with than the actual website of the company, that might be a more intriguing proposition to me.
I'm curious about what would happen is if they sell this by keyword. So like if you buy, so say Jaguar buys the Land Rover keyword.
Yeah.
So if you search for Land Rover and you get a big picture of a Jaguar, like is that, see, then that would be a weird experience.
Just the animal, not the car.
Right, right.
It's all the implementation.
Exactly. All right. Apple apparently looking into solar charging. So you'd never have to plug in your iPad. And when you're outside and you can't see the screen anyway, it's charging up.
Yeah, so there's a new, well, it's not actually a new patent. It's something that was published by the USPTO this week. This is something that Apple filed originally back in 2012 for solar power. So it's a power management array that should accept a power adapter and then solar power direct from gathering devices or traditional chargers. So you either plug in your adapter or you alternatively hook up your computer, your MacBook or whatever, or another piece of hardware directly into a solar panel with a simple cord. The key to this patent is basically using the inputs that already exist, which obviously would make it a lot easier for Apple to be able to roll in and not have to yet again have us buy a bunch of different cords and power management in order to accept solar power. It's composed of power management techniques achievable with existing hardware, but be able to be built using componentry that takes up very little space, making it theoretically possible to integrate it into the existing device designs. Not that Apple really has a problem changing things like ports and
just chucking them out the window.
And, yeah. And pin connectors and that sort of thing. But this is, every once in a while, and it always happens when I'm out of juice, I don't have one of my Mophie packs for my iPhone, and I just think, why aren't there other ways to charge these stupid things, particularly when you're out in the sun? I don't know why this just doesn't exist already. And Tom Krasit, we know from patent applications that sometimes this stuff never even sees the light of day. This could be right around the corner. This could be years away. This could never happen. But why haven't we figured this out yet?
Well, it's hard, right? we're just getting to the point where, when you look at it like solar energy in homes, like where that's starting to become a mainstream thing.
Sure.
And
sure.
The price of solar panels has fallen to the point where it makes sense economically to put these things on houses. Like getting it down to a mobile device is a tougher proposition. And even if you're like connecting still to some other power adapter that is itself solar powered, it's still more of a challenge, but it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? I mean, especially for us who live in California, but it's kind of
in London, it's useless. In Seattle, they're just like, we don't care about
San Francisco gets foggy too.
There's still a little power to be.
Yeah, and the solar is still going to work even with the cloud in the way. But the thing is, there are a bunch of solar chargers out there that you can buy, but they're just not terribly efficient. That's the big thing. Can you get a ton of efficiency out of this if the smart cover actually could provide power for the iPad? If that's the kind of thing you're talking about, now that's intriguing to me. But if you have to connect it to the MagSafe adapter and you got to keep this giant plate out that's the size of a MacBook, that makes no sense to me. I might as well be carrying a second battery, but I can't put a second battery into an Apple product because there's no way to do that unless I use the Lightning charger, the MagSafe adapter, which they've patented and you can't use unless you get a license from them, which they don't give out. So it's just kind of, They could solve the problem in a lot of different ways. If solar is the way to do it, that'd be great. I think battery technologies still are kind of limping along. If we can get that faster, maybe wireless power. Something has to come together at some point.
But, there's nothing more beautiful than the idea of just using light around us in order to charge.
You don't have
to
think
battery
about
power.
It.
Yeah, exactly. That's battery power. Batteries are getting better all the time. I agree with you. It'd be awesome to be able to get like 4 days of battery life watching movies on my iPad or something like that. But I think being able to get solar into the mix is really the ultimate goal.
Solar into a smartwatch.
These solar laptop chargers exist. You can already get laptop chargers, and they may not go right into the MagSafe, but you can plug into them. But as I said, the problem is they're slow. If they could be built in, like you said, to the cover or even the back of the device, so it doesn't matter that they're slow. They're just always giving you a little extra juice. I think that's brilliant.
Trickle solar. Okay. I'm for that.
Yeah. I just, I mean, nobody, I don't see anybody ever using any sort of solar charger in any capacity, at least with the everyday gadgets that we're talking about, because there just isn't a solution yet.
Just needs to be supplemental. That's where I'm hoping this pack
goes. Right, exactly.
Yeah. All right, let's fire up the randomizer. I had a hard time finding a good one today. Got some great input from the chat room, though. And one of the chat room suggestions was Virgin America makes the best airline safety video ever. Very timely with today's news from the FAA. Got 31% of the vote of the five options.
I hate this thing.
You know, I don't like it either. I like their old one better.
They had
like
a little
cartoon before. Now it's this dance number.
Oh, this will be great the second time you watch it, and the third time,
the fifth time. The Virgin America, the old, it was like the
sarcastic
illustration.
Guy talking like this. I remember.
Yeah, I mean, I've been on enough Virgin America flights that one got old to me as well.
Definitely. They needed something new.
But this is like, it's like some sort of like a Glee thing.
Yeah.
I just think it's really...
They have a thing with nuns really gonna on get Virgin old. America.
Could you imagine getting onto your flight at like 5 a.m. in the morning and you're all tired and groggy and suddenly...
You've been waiting in the terminal for 3 hours. Yes. You just threw through a security line that was terribly long.
This is fabulous, and that's fine.
But this will be fine. You'll be able to have your iPhone in airplane mode. You won't have to listen to the thing. You can have your earphones.
No, they force you to listen to that. Yeah, they'll pipe that in over the thing.
No, but even when you have your device out, because you don't have to put them away anymore.
Oh, right, because now you can have...
You'll have your noise-canceling headphones on.
Boom, that'll be on. Although, I hope there's cycling
videos. You are required to pay attention during the safety video.
Well, I can read it. So I don't have to listen to it.
Yeah, but, you know, if you're sleeping, they're not going to wake you up. Yeah, you're required, but nobody has ever seemed to care all that much. I think it's a very well-done dance number. Don't get me wrong. It's well-produced. It looks like a commercial, though. It looks like a commercial for something. It's not something I would want to see more than once.
They really like to make fun of the seatbelt instructions on those Virgin America videos too.
Oh yeah,
where the point was 0.00001%
never operated a
seatbelt. They use that same line in this.
It works
one.
Like
that, that's
this.
Not good.
At least they're trying. Let's see.
Probably a lot of people who have never taken Virgin America flight who are like, I just have no idea what's happening right now.
Yeah, go look at this, and you'll feel like you've been on one of the flights. It does fit with that club theme that they sort of have. Let's see what's on the calendar, Sarah.
Well, the Narrative Clip Life Logging Camera has begun shipping. It was formerly called Memoto, if you remember it with its former name. So, yeah, life loggers, mount up.
Chavis678 called us a bunch of grumpy old ladies because we didn't like the video. It's probably right.
Get off my plane.
Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Got a voicemail from Gil in San Diego, if this is the Gil I'm thinking it is. He is also a Red Sox fan, so congratulations. But he's talking here about the fact that he is an occasional traffic judge, and the Google Glass ticket story caught his eye.
Hey, guys. Gil from San Diego. I wanted to comment on the Google Glass ticket. I actually sit as a traffic judge here in San Diego from time to time as a service of the court. The interesting thing about this is the vehicle code that you assign it under is for monitor viewing, television viewing, that type of stuff. There's specific things you're not allowed to do under the statute. There are exemptions under the statute, including navigation and information that helps the driver be more aware of the road, that's the heads-up display stuff. So the police officer in this case is going to have to, and they'll have the burden of proof to show this, that she was using it for a unlawful purpose, which will be hard for him to do since he can't testify to what she was doing. Only she could see it. The only way I see this working out for the officer if she challenges the ticket is if she told him what she was doing with it. So that'll be the interesting thing. But if it was just sitting on her face, she didn't say anything about it, and he assumes that she was using it for an improper purpose, I'm not sure that would survive a challenge from her in a traffic withdrawal, at least based on the information I know. Hope all is well. Love the show. Bye.
Suddenly can't hear you, Tom.
Oh, sorry. I didn't want to cough into the mic. So she should definitely challenge it. Thanks, Kim.
Yeah.
Appreciate that. That's really good. Well, let's check an email.
Sure. We got a message from Dale in Indy who says, one aspect of Google possibly bringing out a smartwatch based on Google Now that I didn't hear discussed, and I think is the reason why Google will have a leg up in the competition, is voice recognition. Remember that Google Now is voice activated, like Siri, and you can do lots of things through voice commands. Imagine how much nicer it would be if you didn't have to pull your phone out. You could just tap your smartwatch and speak into it to send a text or email, add a note to yourself, ask it what song is playing or what glassophobia is. Google will be able to create more tightly integrated technologies on your watch connected to Google Now on your phone than competitors. I'm sure they are already working on more voice commands for Google Glass. The watch would just then be a variation on Google Glass that you wear on your wrist instead of your face. Just something I realized this morning while pulling my phone out of my pocket to add a note to myself using voice recognition. That could definitely
good
work.
Stuff.
Oh, yeah. Google Now is an amazing app. I know it's turned iOS people that I know that I never thought would switch to Android over to Android. So it'd be interesting to see it in a watch.
All right, that is it for this episode of Tech News Today. Thank you, Tom Krazit, for joining us, as always. It's great that you actually come all the way up to the studio, too. Appreciate that.
Yeah, it's easier coming from Oakland, Sarah, than it is from San Francisco. So,
well, you know, usually people don't break down on their motorcycles on the Golden Gate Bridge, but today they did.
Just happens. Katie. Happens sometimes.
Yeah.
You can find Tom's good works at gigaohm.com. Anything in particular to let folks know about before we let you go?
Well, yeah, just that we are having our design experience conference next week, as I mentioned before, Tuesday and Wednesday in San Francisco at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. There's a lot of cool people there. Jack Dorsey's speaking,
nice.
Tony Fadell of Nest, some folks from Tesla, some folks from GE, and you know, just the whole theme is basically just how design is becoming the most important part of the technology experience.
Yeah, it's a good lineup. That's the lineup I've been seeing peering out at me from the side of the site, right?
Yeah, I think so.
For the past week. So check it out, gigaohm.com. Thank you, Tom. Don't forget, you can submit a story for us to cover, and you can vote other people's stories down or up at technewstoday.reddit.com. Check it out. It's our subreddit that helps us figure out what stories we're going to cover each and every day. Email us, tnt@twit.tv. Give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. We have a YouTube channel. If you'd like to subscribe that way, you can go to youtube.com/technewstoday. And, of course, subscribe to the podcast at twit.tv/TNT. Tomorrow's Friday, and we'll be back with Darren Kitchen. See you then.